So please welcome Gene Melter.
Thank you, Kirk. Good evening. I think I've mentioned here before that I had the least fun in college of anyone I know. It was pathetic. So as a 20-year-old, a sophomore at UCLA, I lived with my oppressive parents, my aging conservative Catholic parents, with just the three of us, my seven older siblings having escaped. But I couldn't afford to move out, so I was stuck there with them. And so my life consisted of going to my classes and working at the Pita Pocket and having dinner with my parents, like on TV trays, actual TV, and watching the news, and then afterwards going to my room and doing my homework. So just like high school, only I was 20. And then going to church with them on Sundays and holy days, and then I did a lot of very grim volunteer work, and that was my life, until one day I was running on the track at UCLA, fitness being another of my self-righteous interests at that time. So I'm on the track at UCLA, and I had seen signs around. There was a track meet coming up, not a college meet, an international track meet with athletes all from all over the world leading up to the 1980 Olympics. So I'm running on the track, and this young man starts running beside me, and he strikes up a conversation. And he's very attractive and smart and funny, and I'm just so flattered and surprised and everything, and he seems really interested in me. He's asking all sorts of questions, and I'm just lapping this up, and I'm jabbering away, after a while, I noticed that when he ran, he kind of threw out his hand a little, his right hand a little bit, you know, every several strides, and so I pointed out to him that this was made his stride inefficient, and he was kind of wasting energy doing this, and he thanked me for my advice, and we kept running and talking, and then after a while, I remembered that when you meet a new person, you're not supposed to just talk about yourself. You're supposed to ask them questions. So I did, and I learned that he was from the East Coast, and he was here in LA for this international track meet because he ran the 1500 and the mile, and in fact, he held the world record for the indoor mile, and we had a good laugh about me giving him advice, you know, and we kept running, and I learned a little bit more. He had gone to Princeton and Oxford, and now he was 25, his name was Craig, by the way, and Craig now just traveled the world going to track meets, and he didn't have to have a real job because he was sponsored by Adidas. So then it was time for me to go to my next class, and we said goodbye, and then I just kicked myself because, you know, I didn't make that connection that would lead to the next thing, and I really liked this guy, and I thought about him and thought about him, and then I thought, well, I'll just go to the track at the same exact time the next day, and I did, the same exact time, and he was there, and he told me he was waiting for me. He was waiting for me because he wanted to see me again. He wanted to invite me to the track meet, and he wanted to take me out to dinner afterward. So just like that, in 24 hours, I had gone from having quite a dreary little life to having an exciting and glamorous life. It was incredible. It was mind-blowing. So what does one wear to a track meet dinner date? I racked my brain. Now, when I was a young woman, I was what you might call style impaired, and maybe I still am, but back then it was really bad, and I couldn't dress myself on a regular day. So what do I wear to this? And so, but I got it exactly right. I went to this discount clothing store near my parents' home called It's a Dilly, took my meager savings, and I bought this kind of shifty dress, you know, simple dress with a little matching jacket. And with that, I wore white sandals and a nice straw hat. You know, I looked kind of like Audrey Hepburnish, maybe. And And so I went to the track meet, and it was, and I was sitting alone in the stands, and but this wasn't awkward because I made sure everyone around me knew why I was there and who I was waiting for. They were all really impressed. And then his event was the last, I think it was the mile was the last thing, and he came in like second or third, I can't remember, something respectable. And then afterwards, he looked for me in the stands, and he waved, and he motioned me down to the field level where all the, you know, the athletes and coaches and VIPs were mingling, and I was very nervous, but so excited. And I spotted among the VIPs Wilt Chamberlain. And for you young people, Wilt Chamberlain was like Shaquille O'Neal or Kobe Bryant. He was a huge, huge celebrity basketball star. But he was also a track fan, I later found out, and had run track and all this. But he went to a lot of meets, and Craig said he knew him and he could introduce us. So we went over there, and he and Craig greeted each other very warmly. They clearly knew each other. And then he introduced the two of us, and I shook his hand. I remember his hand was absolutely gigantic, and I was really nervous meeting this major celebrity, and I just didn't know what to say to him, and I didn't follow basketball or anything. But he was wearing this kind of contraption around his neck on a cord. So I said, oh, you know, what's that? And he explained very proudly that it was like the very latest technology in for, you know, stopwatches. And he had just gotten it, and he really loved the thing. He timed all the races himself, and he started to show me how it worked, and then it stopped working. And he was pressing buttons, and he couldn't get it to do what he wanted to do. And he started yelling, "You broke my stopwatch! Why did you do that?" You know, this sort of thing. And at first I was mortified, and everybody was looking at us, and he was really playing it up. You know, do you know how much I paid for this now? What am I going to do? You know, this kind of thing. And I was so mortified, and then I realized he was joking. And so then I went along, and I said kind of funny things like, oh, you know, I didn't even touch it. It's your fault. Well, you know, this kind of thing. So there I am, engaged in witty banter. With a really major celebrity. I just couldn't believe it was happening. And I looked over and Craig was smiling. He really liked kind of how this was going. And then he went to the locker room, Craig, and changed into a suit and tie. Boy, was I glad I dressed up. Took me to a very nice restaurant, nicer than I'd ever been to in my life. And we had a lovely evening. We had a great time. And that was the start of this romance, this long-distance romance. I got letters and postcards from all over the world, and I'd write to him when he was in, like, a place. And sometimes I'd get a phone call. And when he came to California, he'd take me out. And I'd like to say it was fun and wonderful, but it really wasn't. It was uncomfortable and it was stressful because he reminded me fairly often that I wasn't in his league. So there were comments about my manners, my appearance. He might correct me when I mispronounced a word. One time he suggested I get a book on etiquette. You know, this is like your WASPy kind of person, and I was from kind of more like your Catholic Irish squalor, huge family. You know, I just wasn't polished, you know. And he pointed this out to me fairly often, but you know, he had a point. I can kind of see it because, well, like, for example, there was this one time he took me to this fancy sports banquet for track athletes, And the athletes had just learned that they weren't going to the Olympics because in 1980, Jimmy Carter decided that the U.S. should boycott the Olympics in Moscow because the USSR had just invaded Afghanistan. So this is a room full of people who aren't going to the Olympics. And they're depressed, and they're talking about it at the table. And rather than... okay, so there was this one athlete named Rinaldo Nehemiah sitting at the table, a couple people down from me, football player, hurdler, very famous guy, and he's sort of lamenting this. It's so disappointing he's not going to go to the Olympics. And rather than just let these people, Rinaldo and Craig and all these people, who these world-class athletes who were involved in this whole thing, rather than let them discuss the Olympic boycott, I piped up with a suggestion. And the suggestion was, you know, if you really want to see who's the fastest or whatever, why don't you guys just all meet somewhere? You know, just fly to the same city and just, no one would have to know, it could be a secret, just, and then just like run races against each other. This was my comment. And there was some eye rolling and some kind of groans, and Craig looked really embarrassed. And that wasn't the last incident of that type. So really, you know, at the time when he dumped me, which of course he did eventually after a few months, I was confused and heartbroken. Weren't we in love? How did this happen? Why did it end? But now I'm more confused about why it lasted as long as it did. And it's just going to remain a mystery. Thank you.